Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Conscious Corner. Our regular host, Professor Amin-Ra, will not be with us this evening, and I will be stepping in for him. I'm Roski Mascani, and thanks for attending this evening. On the panel, we have Sister Linda, Brother Machinda, and Brother Hahi. Our guest for this evening is Brother Reginald Muhammad. And Brother Reginald Muhammad has created a book to explain the National Reparations Declaration, a quantitative and qualitative blueprint for Black redress. And it's the first book or document ever published to include a complete definition of reparation and provide a clear model, methodology, and quantification scale to secure Black reparations in America. Also, the topic for this evening is the best Black African response to the post-presidential election 2024. So I spoke with Brother Reginald yesterday, and he agreed to come on last minute, and I'm glad he did. Welcome, Brother Reginald. How are you evening?
Good.
Salaam, brother. Alaikum salam. Thanks for coming.
And yes, and I know I'm talking to the entire family of Barigani, Hotep, and Free the Land. And what's up to the people? And thank each and every one of y'all who thought it not robbery to come on tonight and hear what we had to say about the best Black or African response to the post-presidential election 2024. And Brother Raj, thank you so much for having me. And thank you, brother, for this opportunity. I want to say is, first off, let me give a overview of what I saw a couple of weeks ago with this election. And I have a perspective, I think, that's a little bit different. And then two, for those who are not aware of my background, I'm a political scientist. And so I teach and organize at the grassroots level, but I also teach on the campus, been on and off the campus for the last 20 years now. I teach politics and global issues, state and local government, public policy, urban politics, as well as contemporary political thought. And so I have a perspective, and then also I've taught electoral politics at the Atlanta University Center. So I bring a perspective that may be somewhat unique, somewhat controversial, but again, I bring that perspective based on over 30 years as a political scientist, 30 years as an organizer, 30 years as a student of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and a host of other great reparationists. And right now, I do what I do full time is the National Reparations Institute. But let's just look at the what happened. Be very clear about what happened 2 weeks ago. What Black America should have witnessed was a consolidation of white workers, white women, white nationalists, and the white elite. They all, the majority of them, decided that no matter how uncivilized, how uncouth, unrefined, unethical Donald Trump was, he was going to be the next president of the United States. Now, it's interesting because I'm not going to be advocating for either one of the parties. I vote as an independent. And I think the problem with us as a people being in part of either one of the parties, both of them are extreme. Now, Brother Raj, us as the original Black or African people or Kemetic people, we have to always work on being centered and balanced. You can't be centered and balanced in either one of the parties in the United States politically, culturally, spiritually, economically or any otherwise, you can't be. Am I still on? Okay.
Yes, you are.
Okay. You cannot be balanced if you're in either one of the parties and you're pushing the agenda, because that extreme right agenda, it's counter. It is a very, it's based on U.S. capitalism, and you know its history and how diabolical it has been. If you say that you're a registered Democrat, that's white extreme also. Because look at the agenda and look at what they had our people pushing. Even though our sister Kamala Harris was certified and qualified to hold that position, it was no way they were going to allow her. It was no way they were going to allow her to ascend to that position when right now, when capitalism is in crisis all over the world. And you see white fear. You see whites attempting to consolidate their efforts. Because again, look at what Dr. Welsing would always teach us, Dr. Francis Crest Welsing, the late Dr. Francis Crest Welsing and Neely Fuller. If you don't understand racism, their quote, his quote is, if you don't understand racism, white supremacy, everything else you understand will only confuse you. And so let's not be confused in this critical hour. They seriously consolidated their forces to say that no matter how many times Donald Trump has filed bankruptcy, how much of a pathological liar he is, no matter how diabolical he is, no matter how vindictive he has been toward women, no matter how corrupt he has proven to be, no matter how over a couple thousand lawsuits that he's been involved in, but at no time were they willing, at this time, they were not willing to say, no matter what, they said, white women, white workers, the white elite, the white nationalists said, this is gonna be our man. Why? Because at the end of the day, they thought that they needed a fighter economically, politically, socially, educationally, culturally, and historically. So what you saw was a consolidation of all those white nationalists, white workers, white ruling class, white elite, and white women. And of course you had some blacks that jumped on board. And then of course you had a growing Latino population that decided that Donald Trump was their man. Now, think about that though. Here's to show you that it was a deliberate consolidation. You and I, and anybody on this Zoom call tonight, none of us could have been elected dog catcher in Compton, California, if we had the baggage of a Donald Trump. Now, remember, this is the same Trump who's part of January 20th, the attack on the Capitol, where they attempted to block the efforts of the new elected president. Twice impeached, four cases, two at the federal level and two at this two different state level cases that he's involved in, criminal cases. But again, the white majority, and I'm not being silly, I'm not talking about all white people. I'm saying, but the white majority decided still he could be the next, the 47th president of the United States. There is no black man or woman in the United States, no black man or woman in the United States could have had that kind of baggage and would be elected president. And because I can show you where blacks who have committed far less crimes than he has, and they sink their campaign after one controversy with a woman or one controversy with something illegal or money or otherwise. But why is it that Donald Trump? I have a book coming out to the audience that is that I've been working on. It'll come out in 2025, but the book is entitled The Trump Takeover, Politics of a Sadistic Psychopathic President and Population. Again, The Trump Takeover, Politics of a Sadistic Psychopathic President and Population. That's what you got here in white America, in America now, who would elect a Donald Trump. No matter what the baggage is, he was gonna be their man. Why? Because for the white elite. Remember now, when he was the 45th president, he gave them the biggest tax break ever in U.S. history. For white nationalists, he comes with the kick butt, big stick mentality. And anybody in white people's way, that they feel that they're in their way politically, economically, socially, culturally, or whatever, or otherwise, here's our man with the big stick who will kick butt and take names later. So we gotta really see that and understand that. So it was nothing that black people could do as far as attempting, because even if all the registered black voters, male and female, voted for our dear sister Kamala Harris, she was not going to be the 47th president. Now, remember now, when you're talking at the president, U.S. president, it's a popular vote. But remember, too, the Electoral College has a final say so. And we know that history, the Electoral College does not always vote with what the popular vote has decided. So with that in mind, what is the best response that black people could give at this time? As I thought about it and as I looked at it and considered politically, what is it that we could do? And believe it or not, there is no political agenda, there is no public policy agenda, there is no spiritual agenda, there's no economic or culture agenda that our people can offer if it does not include complete reparations. The only solution and the best solution for the masses of our people is complete reparations. And so what should be our response all over the country to the audience tonight here in the Conscious Corner? And I'm sorry that Professor Ra couldn't be with us, but we will be praying for Professor Ra and we'll be pulling for him and I'll reach out to him tomorrow. But getting back to the subject, one of the things that has to happen in the United States with black people, I know that they're talking about, well, we're going to look at more statistics. We're going to figure out what's wrong. We're going to reboot. Again, it's like putting black people on that hamster wheel and you just rotating round and around. You're not really making any progress. You stay on that wheel. And only thing most of our leaders can tell you, well, we got to vote more. We got to vote more. We got to build bigger coalition. But again, at the end of the day, if black people are going to be successful and sustainable for the remainder of the 21st century, it's complete reparations. And of course, how are we defining complete reparations? The process by which the people are provided with the means to restore their condition, to achieve complete decolonization, to make themselves whole through the ability to self-govern, self-sustain, and self-defend with their own independent landmass, economy, education, culture, and high civilization. That's critically important because whites are not going to, that ruling class, white workers, white women, and the white elite that put Trump in the office, they're not going to respond to anything else. Pleading, protesting, picketing, prayer breakfast, and petitioning, that will not shape public policy that will make that will provide a base and a foundation that is sustainable and successful for blacks in for the remainder of the 21st century. Now, remember now, why is it complete reparations? If we say, Brother Ross, we have a homeless problem here in the United States, which we do, is growing. We say that we have a poverty rate that's growing, the illiteracy rate that's growing, suicide rate that is growing, the black family, all of these, we'll say, some people say those are the problems. No, those are the results of our problem. And the only thing that will address that is complete reparations. Reparations is mainstream now. The conversation is all over the world, all over the United States, local, at the federal, state, and local level. So at the end of the day, what needs to happen now, the best response is start to forming local organizing committees throughout the country. A minimum of 50 local organizing committees, various states and various cities and municipalities around the country. And again, what are you organizing for? I heard a brother say the other day, he said, well, we got to have a black agenda. We have a black agenda. But are you segments of the Black bourgeois sector, are they willing to embrace that agenda? Because our youth are. Brother, we just had Brother Family on the Conscious Corner. We just had the National Reparations Indaba, the fourth Indaba. Students, I spoke to over 500 students prior to the Indaba and during the Indaba, which was on November 1st and 2nd, early this month. Well, at the end of the day, we had leaders from at least five different areas. We had leaders came and experts who came who deal with the education and culture process of people. They came and talked about and presented their best work on economics and investment, public and mental health, and then state and land acquisition, and then five, public policy and legislation. Now, what was unique about this fourth annual Indaba, it was youth and centered base, So we had students from different institutions, of course, the Atlanta University Center, Spelman Morehouse, Clark Atlanta University, Morris Brown, but we had students from around the country. And I can assure you, they are ready with the reparations piece. Some of the old guard are not going to participate in reparations. And remember, when we say complete reparations, family, we're not talking about just the federal government. We're talking about the we're talking about the select multinational corporations that owe us. We're talking about nonprofits that owe us, and also we're talking about the federal government, state and local government, and then again nonprofits that owe us, and then also select multinational corporations, and then to what we've identified is thousands of plantations that are still up and operating in the United States. They all owe us. And our students are ready to organize locally as well as the federal level. And so what's key about that, because the politicians today and the elected officials in some of the organizations at the local level and at the national level, some of the civil rights organizations, they keep missing the mark. And some of them have told me, well, Professor Muhammad, we're not ready for reparations. Oh yeah, you may not be, but the masses of our people are in the position, and especially our youth are ready for reparation. And so the key is that has to be our best response. Otherwise, what you will see is conferences, more studies, and then what you will do, the Democratic Party will come back with their hierarchy of mostly whites and tell you what the agenda is. Or the conservatives will come and tell you what the agenda is. And then at the end of the day, it will never address Black people. And one of the things that we've got to bring to the table would be our best response. It has to be a quid pro quo. If you go to any of the other communities, they'll support you in electoral politics. They'll support you at the federal, state, and local level, but there's a quid pro quo. In fact, they give you a list of five to seven things you better sign off on, or otherwise the hell with you. Black people have to have that position. From now, our politics can't continue to be social symbolic. The politics can't be simply social symbolic. And let me give you the definition of what we call social symbolic politics, because Black people have been steeped in it. Let me just give you some examples. Some of our people supported Biden the first time and the second time before he dropped out. And the problem with that is that Biden, like Clinton and other politicians, understand that most of our people engaged in a social symbolic politics. And let me give you the definition. Social symbolic model: public engagement that pacifies a population which lacks political, social maturity or substance. Again, social symbolic model: public engagement that pacifies a population which lacks political and social maturity or substance. So when Biden shows up at a historically Black college here in Atlanta, Biden shows up at the Pascal, historic Pascal restaurant, and take photos with our people, come to the biggest Black church in Atlanta, pats his foot and stomps his feet while our people are singing, doing church service, and while they're worshiping. And then we say, that's our man. And at the end of the day, that's not public policy. That will not give the people what we need economically, politically, socially, educationally, and culturally. will not help or provide for that.
And brother, so, Brother Reginald,
okay,
can we get the panel and you see if they have some questions or comments?
Oh, yeah.
At this
please
point,
yeah. Yes,
okay.
sir.
Okay, Sister Linda.
No, I don't have anything because I'm just learning and listening to what he said, but I don't have anything right now.
Okay, Brother Ahi.
Brother, you're right on the point. And I think that sometimes, well, all the time, we don't look at the main motivation of the white people here, which is white supremacy.
Yes, sir.
They always try and deflect it by saying, well, it's the economics. It's the working class. It's about power and control.
Yes, sir.
You said something about the social, symbolic, political maturity. I have a unique situation being here in Michigan with observing the Arabs and the progressive African diaspora.
Yes, sir.
The Arabs are like a marginal group.
Yes, sir.
Sway the election here in Michigan with 200,000 people.
Exactly. Good point.
They sat back and told the powers that be that we're not voting for you unless you address the genocide that's happening over in the Middle East.
Exactly. Yes, sir.
And they did, and they had an effect on this election here in the state of Michigan.
Yes, sir.
The next time they have a national election, they will be heard.
Oh, absolutely.
They want that power.
Yes, sir.
What is wrong that we cannot galvanize and have an agenda that we can push or will push in order for our support? Because that seems like the only leverage that we really have.
Yes, sir.
On the political scale is to galvanize and tell them what we want, and we're not voting Democrat or Republican or anything else. And you got to sacrifice to do it.
Yes, sir.
You got to sacrifice. It's not an immediate fix, but they have to know that you're serious and you're not business as usual. And I'm going to leave it at that with you, Brother Muhammad.
Brother, thank you. Profound point. I concur with you. Because one of the things that I have in the declaration is called the quadruple-based paradigm. The quadruple-based paradigm says that internationally, nationally, and locally, there is always a European ruling class somewhere, internationally, nationally, and locally. And what they care about is, number one, is that their power base, what you just said, brother, their power base is number one. Number two is their profit base. Number three is their policy base. And number four, their privilege base. That's how they make all of their political and economic decisions. It ain't based on what is fair, what is just, what is equitable, what is civil, and what is human. See, and we attempt to appeal to them in that manner. So they just showed you with the election of Trump that it make no difference to them. White Christians, white nationalists, white elite. You couldn't have found a candidate more uncivilized, uncouth, unrefined, unethical, and unworthy of the office. But they put him there because he would end up being their best dirty worker. And so you're absolutely correct, brother. You're absolutely correct. So how do we, what's our best offensive?
Brother Reginald, let's get Mashinda in there and then you.
Okay, yes, sir. Excuse me, brother. Yes, correct.
Brother Mashinda.
Yo, I'm just listening. I'm in agreement, but you know, at the same time, you know, baby boomers is getting older.
Yes, sir.
You know, people that grew up in civil rights and all the other facets of trying to come up in life, trying to, you know, reparations, the whole nine yards. You know, people that are that grew up in families that were in tune to what's going on. You know, this is not something new.
Yes, sir.
And so when you're dealing with the silent generation of the 1928 to 1945, they're dying off. You know, they're still here, but they're getting older.
Yes, sir.
And then you move up to the baby boomers and the millennials,
Yes,
you know,
sir.
born in the mid-60s to like 1981 or something like that. So there's a cluster of folks that are still around that's conscious. You're one of them. I'm one of them. Everybody on the call is one of them. And so, but there's a lot of new people on the block, and that's the Gen X and the different. And so these social media folks that's under the influence of social media and all the other persuasive tactics that's used to mold minds.
Yes, sir.
So my cup is half full, though. I must say, I'm not giving up, and I'm not saying that reparations or nothing, you know, that this can't happen. You know, I'm all for it. You know, it makes sense. But, you know, again, we're talking about the election. We're talking about the post-election mentality, you know, describing what happened. People are uninformed.
Yes, sir.
People aren't as deep as we think they are, you know. And so
Misinformed,
we,
yes.
we're basically we're giving them too much credit. And
Yes.
you know, in other words, what you expect? You know, I work in education. I'm on the front line every day, and I know what's walking in the door.
Yes, sir.
And when I see the young blacks talking about they voted for Trump, I don't ridicule them for who they voted for, because that's a dying argument. You know, that has no value in me criticizing them. You know, because
Yes.
that's one thing where we go wrong is when we criticize or we attack, you know, whether it's the rap music or who they're voting for. We come at them like, oh, you're crazy, you're stupid, you're this, you're that. And they've been hearing that in their households because of a lot of the breakdown in the family households that's going down, a lot of stress that's going down. So, you know, there's a strategy to provoke thought and discussion among our youth. And when I say youth, I'm not talking about 9, 10 year olds or 15 or 20 years old. I'm talking about 30 year olds and 35 year olds.
Yes, sir.
And so what's happening is it's got that the communication has gotten lost in the shuffle. And so they're fitting.
Whose communication,
Well,
Brother
I
Senator?
should.
Whose communication? Help me understand how the non-white people are embracing white supremacy. They're not listening to us, but they're listening to somebody.
Listen, man, the white folks is ignorant too. The people don't even know what they vote for Trump or whoever they vote for. They don't understand what we're talking about on this call. I deal with white folks every day, racist white folks, Confederate white folks. They don't
Yes, sir.
understand it at this, they don't understand it at this level. So I think the brother set his premise. Well, in my interpretation is that, you know, he mentioned Dr. Francis Cress Welsing, you know, one of my folks that I've studied and never had a pleasure of meeting, but I was around when she was alive,
Yes, sir.
and Neely Fuller. You know,
Yes, sir.
white supremacy, what that means is, like, if you look at the demographics across the world, if you look at it in America, they're losing their population. They say it in the name of their way of life. Things ain't the same no more. Make America great again. We're losing our grip. They're gonna
Exactly.
lose that through attrition, through natural attrition. They're gonna lose their grip. It's gonna be over for them. Now, what are you saying? I'm not saying that I'm being hateful, saying, hey man, y'all gotta die, you know. But the point I'm saying is that they understand their mortality. They understand that they're on the clock. If you study sports, the shot clock or the game clock is they're down by 24 and it's in the fourth quarter and it's about 2 minutes left in the game. So everybody's panicking. This is last call for alcohol in the party. You know, they say last call for alcohol. If you're going to get a drink, you better get your drink because about the party's over. And so this is what they're doing. So Trump say, if you don't vote for me and if I'm not elected, this is going to be it.
Yeah.
And he's not lying. If you understand what Paul Mooney said back when I think Obama was, he said it'll never be another white president again. Well, it was premature, but he was making a statement that he understood evolution. And I mean evolution in the sense that things are evolving and naturally things are just naturally happen on the earth where it's like, hey, you know, they call it people of color and all these other things. But the bottom line is that what you've been standing for all this time is coming to an end. Now, in our lifetime, we don't know how long we're going to be here. We may be here hostage in a situation where we got to watch it play out. But at the same time, it's going to play out. It's going to change. And so that's the cup half full. Is through natural attrition, it's going to happen. So, you know, reparations will happen. California's already studying and said, hey, we need to do this and we need to do this. We need to give back. We've given back people their land back. This is wrong. This is right. But the struggle is that the ones that don't want you to have that land back, the ones that don't want you to have reparations, the ones that want you to die in the federal prison system on death row, which is Trump is proposing to, you know, to start knocking the rest, you know, the people that are on death row on the federal level, you know, they ain't killed nobody federally, but Trump, in 120 years, they say he believes in, you know, so there's an agenda. And all I'm saying is it's a white supremacist agenda. And that's that. That's the bottom line. Our youngsters, our generations, X, Y, Z, whatever you want to call them, they're ignorant of this information. And so we wish that they all were on this call, but they're not. The people on this call are the people that's like baby boomers and maybe some, you know, the ones that came a little bit after the baby boomers, you know, the mid 60s to 81, to where we understand this, but the masses of our people. And what I'm saying, I'm not speaking for everyone, but there's a lot of ignorant people. So anyway, I just wanted to freelance that out, that it's going to happen. It's going to be reparations. It's going to be a good time at some point in terms of what we deserve. But it's a war right now. I'm done.
Brother, you make
you
a good
literally
point.
In a minute.
Brother, you make a very good point. But let me assure you, brother, all over the country, there is a growing number of youth who you cannot marginalize. You can't put over here in a category and who are not afraid, who move around, who travel, who have resources. And again, that's why they needed to see an election like this. To give an example, you have the generation that you talked about, brother. They had to see the George Floyd situation. They had to see the Trayvon Martin. You couldn't have told them that history, and never would they possibly have read that history. So they had to see it firsthand. So they had to see a Donald Trump organize damn near an insurrection, a complete insurrection on January 6th, 2020. Our children had to see that, brother, and the younger generation. They had to see the George Floyd incident. They've had to see unarmed Black men and women shot down and beat down. And so they know, brother, that has allowed them to say, you know what? It can't be business as usual. And again, brother, you're right. Some of them are being foolish on the internet, but this is how they organize. And give an example, when we talked about the quid pro quo, how we will get reparations, brother, is that, and it's coming. California, we applaud that initiative. But at the federal, state, and local level, brother, there has to be a different model and methodology in order to actually make it happen. We have to be organized. And again, brother, we just came, finished the Indaba here. And again, students and youth are ready. And one of the recommendations that I'm making, and we're advocating and we're organizing to make it happen, is that there will be local organizing committees set up around the country, brother, that is in response to the post-election situation with Trump and his ilk. Well, again, what is going to be the response? What is the best response that our people can gravitate when we start saying complete reparations? That there are so many variables that everybody can be involved in, no matter what your ideology, your philosophy, or your theology. And now the Democratic Party and the Republican Party are going to be open to it, because what they're going to find, brother, is that they already see the fact that Blacks are voting less. The national voting turnout was any, depending on what state it was, but even at the federal level, 10 or 15% lower than it was 4 years ago. So you can't just tell people to vote anymore. People have to see that they will benefit from it. And then two, we have a growing youth now who understands why Black consciousness and commitment and consistency in our unity is key. Again, for the last few months, that's what I've been doing in Atlanta, organizing and working and sitting and teaching and listening to our youth and our students, brother. And then when I say youth and student, you're right. And that's any of them under 35 to 18 to 35, that generation, again, because one of the things that they have mastered is the technology, the gadgets, the phones and everything that I may struggle with. Some of us on this call may struggle with, but they have mastered that. And so when you start talking complete reparation, the select multinational corporation, next year, when our students close 10,000 accounts in within 1 week at Wells Fargo or Chase Bank, whoever we decide, they're coming to the table. See, this reparations is not something that you won't, that some of you all are saying you won't see in your lifetime. Well, if you don't organize, if you don't understand the quadruple-based paradigm that they make all of their economic and political decisions based on will it help or hurt, their power-based, their profit-based, their policy-based, and privilege-based. Why are they in Ukraine? Why are they slaughtering our people on the Gaza, on the West Bank and the Gaza Strip? Why is there a genocide? Well, again, apply the quadruple-based paradigm. Does it help or hurt their power-based, their profit-based, their policy-based, and privilege-based? They'll decide reparations based on the paradigm also. When the power-based starts to be ill-affected, they'll come to the table. Corporate, federal government, nonprofits that owe us, and then some of the plantations that are still up and operating under different names and different foundations and different businesses. But brother, I concur with you. But what I want to add that our youth and students, brother, there's a growing population of them who are conscious. And again, they know they're starting to know and starting to understand the reparations piece.
Brother, if I could just add something, you know, yes, Kamala Harris had 76 million votes.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Well, there are only two other presidential candidates that have more votes than her in the history of this election in America. And that, yes, was the moron that got more votes than her this time, and Biden, who got, yes, 81 million, and we're comparing that to her. I really don't, yep, see the people, the number of people shrinking that are voting. They just didn't expect a felon, rapist, moron to get more.
Who didn't expect him to get more?
Some of the people who aren't really interested in this process or interested in the history of these devils.
Okay, well, I was saying in the swing states, brother, you'll see that there was some of the swing states, and I don't have the numbers right in front of me right now, but at the end of the day, the voting was down, brother, because again, they expected, they were hoping that Kamala Harris could get in and energize the base. And they knew up front that if the Biden had stayed in the race, he was not going to win. His numbers were too low. And then again, with the think about, brother, you got over 2 million Muslims in the United States. And you talked about Michigan, but you're talking about Pennsylvania. You're talking about some of the southern states and even the northeastern states where they're heavy population.
Yeah.
They were not going to vote for Joe Biden, brother, because at the end of the day, so now they have gone back, and those who are pollsters, they now saying, okay, the next time around, how do we offset this? Well, you're going to have to come to the table. And now, hopefully, our people will understand that you, when you're dealing with electoral politics, whether it's federal, state, or local level, always decide what that quid pro quo is going to be. What is it that you're going to get, and what is it that you're going to give in order to make sure your agenda and the needs of the masses of the people are addressed? And so, again, I concur with you all. At the end of the day, nationally, and especially in the swing states, they did not get the count that they got from Biden and Obama, those numbers. And so, and at the end of the day, you see that around the country. Even here in Georgia, brother, the turnout was good for whites and white workers. In fact, they increased. But what you see is that even at in the state here, the black voters, Asian voters, Latino voters, the vote count is down in a lot of the precincts. And again, because
compared to 81, compared to 2020.
Yes, sir. Okay.
Okay.
And so at the end of the day, my point is that you can't just tell people and young people just go vote. And some of them in the civil rights community, their thing is vote, vote. No. At some point, you got to have an agenda, and you got to go and tell that ruling class, look here, here's our agenda, and we need you to public, and it's spelled out in a very logical, chronological way. Here's our agenda. Here's 5 to 7 main points. We need you to sign off and say you're going to do it. And if you don't do it, you don't get our support. And that's something that when you go to the LGBT community here in Atlanta, you go to the Jewish community, you go to the Asian community, they say, oh yeah, we're with you. If you go to AIPAC and they say, okay, well, here's the agenda. If you sign off on it, yeah, we got you, you got our support. If not, keep stepping. We've got to be mature enough and have that heart to tell any segment of the white ruling class, whether they say they're conservative or liberal, here's our agenda.
So-called liberal.
Don't. And again, I'm suggesting to you, I'll go on the campus at Harvard University or Howard University, the capital, D.C., or come back to Detroit and prove that any politician or any leader or any organization coming to our people, if it's not complete reparations, again, I can show you conclusively, it will end up being crumbs and confetti, peanuts and popcorn for the masses of our people, if it's not complete reparations. And that's the only thing that we have not tried. And anytime you find Blacks who don't support reparations, it's generally for two reasons. And doing this for over 30 years now, brother, and being blessed to have a modern methodology, when you have Black people who don't support the reparations, complete reparations, is generally for two reasons. There's a lack of knowledge about what complete reparations is, or they're fearful of what the backlash or the response from the white elite, the white ruling class, their white associates, and white politicians. Those are the only two reasons why they're ignorant or what the fears. And then you got Black elected officials, brother, and reparations at the federal level is ready. Because remember now, Kamala Harris, brother, if you go back in June of 2019, she co-authored Senate Bill 40. That is a reparations bill, her and Cory Booker and others. So she knows the reparations question. She wasn't going to mention it out on the campaign because, again, the response of white workers, white women, and the white ruling class. so she wasn't going to do it. But if she had gotten there, it was going to be our job to push her and make her do it and let her know you don't get another term. If you don't do it, you don't. One of the things that happened to Keisha Lance Bottoms here in Atlanta, she was behind in the polls, so she came to the working people, people on the ground, the grassroots, Black organizers, including myself, and said she needed our help. We sat down with her over a couple weeks' time, came up with an agenda. She agreed to the agenda. She went public with it. But when she got in office, she backpedaled, wouldn't take our calls and everything else. So we told her, and I told her, and my students and the youth said, well, you know, you don't get another time, a term. So she didn't even run because she knew.
She knew.
People, she was not going to get another term in the mayor's office. She couldn't come back to the people that she had lied to and buck dancing for the white ruling class here in Atlanta. And so when she first got into the office, what she did is gave them the gulch. And a gulch, which is a big business development. Now the streets are raggedy. Pookie and Ray Ray them can't get free vocational training. The HBCUs can't get the funding that the state and city provides for them. She's not willing to pay all the workers a minimum of $15 an hour, but you're gonna find billions of dollars for development for the white ruling class, though. See, and that's one of the contradictions here in Atlanta with all of the Black politicians. There's always a white ruling class, international, federal, state, and local. Here in Georgia, Arthur Blank, who owns the Falcons, he's part of that white ruling class. So, but we let Keisha Lance Bottoms know, don't waste our time. You're not getting a second time. And as opposed to losing, she didn't even run.
Well, it's good to see that you had that type of political maturity there. But what has it gotten you in Atlanta?
But again, I think that it is at the local level, we got some council people, and we got people who are commissioners who are doing, who are saying, you know what? In fact, at the county level, for the first time, there's a reparations initiative at the county level. Why? Because there's a quid pro quo. If you're going to be elected here in Atlanta, city council or otherwise, then you got the litmus test is that you support a reparations agenda. And so we got to be able to do that around. And then, brother, we're making progress with that because remember now, there are over 100 cities and municipalities now that have reparations initiatives. There are over 10 states. Say 10, 15, 20 years ago, reparations was looked upon as something radical, extreme, not even possible. So I'm saying, but I'll take some other questions.
Yeah, protracted struggle, brother.
Yes, sir.
All right. Is there any more questions? Brother Mashinda, Sister Linda, Brother Ahi. Okay. Brother Reginald?
I have a question. You said, okay. Can I ask one quick question?
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
He mentioned that locally, because I'm here in Florida, what can a person do for your local level? How do I get involved?
You know, that's a good question.
About education and things. That's what I'm more concerned about, the education.
Okay. That's a good question. But we're going to be in the next few months, even in Florida and various states where we got a sizable Black populations, they're going to be local organizing committees. Those local organizing committees will be charged with five areas. Again, education, culture is number one. Number two is economics and investment. Three is public and mental health. Four is state land acquisition. And five, public policy and legislation. Those are the five pillars that make up the complete reparations movement. So it's a seat at the table for everybody, regardless of your ideology, your philosophy, or your theology. Those local organizing committees will start to do that. And so, brother, at the local level, they will be pushing complete reparation. Then at the federal and state level, they will be pushing reparation. but it will begin in the local organizing committees. And again, we just left the National Reparations Indaba, which means the great sitting down or summit at the Atlanta University Center. And we got students and youth and even adults and some of the old guard in the movement who are now ready to do just that. And so, Linda, Sister Linda, your talent is needed, your skill is needed. And again, what will happen in Florida, we want to have at least, because, you know, Florida is not a little small area, but we talk about from Southern Florida to Central Florida, all the way up to the Panhandle, Northern Florida. We want to have at least four or one strong local organizing committee in the state of Florida, because we can do it virtually too, as well as in person. But what we want to start with is first off reading the declaration, because again, people say, well, where is it? Black people ain't never developed an agenda. Yes, there's an agenda. If you read the declaration, you clearly see it's an agenda. And then too, Dr. Ray Wimbush and I talked today. He was here at the National Reparations Indaba on November 1st and 2nd. And his book, the students will be, who are in the local organizing committee, will be reading Belinda's petition. It is a concise history of the reparations a concise history for reparations for the transatlantic slave trade. And again, why this book is key also to, it is a quick read.
The name, brother, because I can't see that.
Oh, okay.
Belinda.
Belinda's Petition, a concise history of the reparations for the transatlantic slave trade. And that's by Dr. Ray Wimbush. It is a quick read. And when you read it, our students don't have to read 300, 400 pages of trying to figure out what you're talking about. And I just went through the book, and shame on me, all the books that I read on reparations, I had not read Dr. Ray Wimbush's book, but my students and the youth here are buying the book, and they will be reading the book in local organizing committees. That's
Dr.
how
we,
Dr. Ray Wimbush. He wrote the book
Ray
to the state.
Wimbush.
Some consider him the father and the dean of the reparations movement today, but he's at Morgan State University. He wrote the foreword for the National Reparations Declaration. And again, what's key about the National Reparations Declaration is that when you read it, we clearly define what complete reparations is, who owe us, why they owe us, how much they owe us, and why reparations is good for all of Black America. We're able to do that in 82 pages. And again, we had to write something. So if Pookie or Peanut is standing on the corner, campus, corporate America, or in Congress, when they read it, they're just like, oh, you know what? That makes sense. We can do this. We had to write it, again, less than 100 pages. So because of the attention span of our youth, and when they read it, if you look at the reviews that we've gotten from the youth, who have read the declaration, then you see that they, it's something that they will read, it'll hold their interest, and they're gonna, okay, we can do this. And it's legit for us. It's legit for us. And so again, that's my position. Anybody got any questions, any comments about anything that I said? And I know I'm kind of bouncing around, I've said a lot, but again, that's what we're pushing post presidential election 2024. There's nothing being, again, they're talking about, we're going to study, we're going to reboot, we're going to see what works, what doesn't work. That's what Black politicians and elected officials are saying. And again, Blacks, you just cannot put them in the Democratic Party and say, stay there and follow our agenda. You're not going to be just put them in the Republican Party and say, here's our follow the agenda from the white ruling class and get them to stay and go along with it. They're just not doing that, especially young people, brother.
Good to see us get there.
Yeah. Well, Brother Reginald, that was excellent, as usual. Brother Machinda, I'm starting to really understand his point that he's making, and he's been talking to us about the last call. I'm really starting to see it a little bit more clear and clear. And he, every time he presents it, it becomes more clear and clear. So, and everybody on here has made a great contribution to what we're doing here. And Brother Reginald, I hope you come back tomorrow. it's a great thing I would say that complete reparation is holistic reparations. That's another way of putting it. You know, you address multiple areas when it comes to the complete reparation. So, I mean, it's a great thing.
And brother, let me say this too, because it's applicable to California. We have to be very careful, because there's a movement out there saying, okay, if you're gonna get reparations, you got to be able to prove lineage. That was the argument and the fight even in California. I wrote a letter in 2022 and warned the 9 commissioners in California not to be backed into the corner and say lineage is the only way you can receive reparations. It could be one variable or one way, but it shouldn't be the only way.
Yes.
Because think about this. The argument, and again, I wrote the letter in 2022, and brothers, I'll make sure I provide that letter to you all, because 2 weeks ago, that letter, I've gotten pushback and resentment and kickbacks and even threats, because I wrote the letter and warning the California 9 commissioners not to be backed into a corner and say you got to be able to prove lineage. Now, let me give you this example real quick. Brother, y'all have over 10,000 homeless people, and the majority of them are Black in LA County. Now, ask yourself, if it was against the law for us to read and write America, and now after the Emancipation Proclamation of 1863 on into 1865, when we start celebrating Juneteenth out of Texas, it was against the law for us to even read and write. Now you're telling a people who are 167 years up from chattel slavery, go back and prove lineage. See, that was that came from the Black bourgeoisie and then government. Where are they gonna get the resources to prove lineage? Those of us who possibly can do it, we have the resources and time. But what about the people who are homeless there, who are locked out and who've been for generations, who have been systematically locked out, locked under, and locked in? You tell them to go prove lineage. And then two, the second question is, who are you going to prove lineage to? Who's gonna validate and approve it? You're going back now to the former slave master's grandchildren, and they're going to approve it? We're self-respecting people there, and people who are self-determining.
What a point.
It could be a variable, but think about, brother, go back and read the book, The Peculiar Institution of Slavery by Dr. Kenneth Stamp. And he shows you there's a fight between the North and the South. Go back and read Lerone Bennett's work, Forced into Glory. But there's a fight between the North and the South, and some of these crackers deliberately destroyed records. So you're telling our people who couldn't even read and write, many of them at that time, go back and find records that your ancestors never kept. Many of them didn't. My father passed maybe almost 20 years ago, but he grew up and he didn't have a birth certificate, because he was born in Florida, in Marianna, Florida, and he didn't have a birth certificate. But how they knew he was, because the midwife delivered him in the field, because they had left their home up in near Marianna, Florida, around the Panhandle, Tallahassee area. They had left their home hiding in the woods because the Klan had come through looking for Black men at that time when he was born. So the midwife delivered him out in the field. But so she never went into the town to record it. And how they remember what his birth was is that they had written it down in a Bible somewhere.
That's a so, point, bro.
And he was a professional, but he could not prove. Brother, my father's a college graduate. He was former vice mayor and city council in St. Petersburg, Florida, retired college professor, but he could not go back and prove. So now you're going to ask Black people throughout the United States where they have deliberately destroyed records and was against law for us to even read and write, and you tell our people. See, that came from bourgeoisie and then the government to say, prove lineage. And so it started a fight. And my thing is that you had not done any research in California, that you started out the gates with the argument, you got to be able to prove lineage. You ain't gathered no empirical data. You haven't done any research to look at potentially how that would affect the population that possibly deserve reparations. So we have to be very careful with that. And then that what they're saying too is that think about those who have struggled in the reparations movement. And you're saying if you can't prove lineage and your enslavement, what about some of those who came after the enslavement? And then here's the other argument that they're using. Well, if you what will happen is somebody from Africa or the Caribbean or Central or South America will claim, brothers, do y'all know that there is not one Black organization here in the United States of Africans or those from Central or South America or the Caribbeans attempting to thwart our efforts? Show me there is not one organization attempting to interfere with Blacks getting reparations. In fact, in the Caribbean, CARICOM is an organization that's dealing with the island nations down there, and they're more organized than some of us on the reparations question. They're looking at Britain, they're looking at France and others. I was blessed to be in Accra, Ghana this time last year at the International Reparations Conference. They're organizing around the world for reparations. In fact, our unity is the key. Because think about the federal government. When they see us united with Black Africa, with all the minerals and the resources they need to be strategically fit, and the African brothers and sisters say, well, yeah, y'all answer the question of reparations for Blacks in America, or the hell with y'all. They're coming to the table because now it affects their power base, their profit base, their policy base, and privilege base. And remember now, you can't be the superpower unless you can control populations, land masses, wealth, and resources. You can't be the superpower unless you can control land masses, populations, wealth, and resources of others.
And have an army.
Yeah. Well, that's the power base, brother. You're absolutely right. When you keep hearing me saying the power base, that's one of the components within the power base. That militant. You're absolutely right. We're on the same page.
Well, this is excellent. Let's have some parting words, Brother Reginald, please.
Well, let me make sure, is there any questions? Do I need to clarify anything? I want to first again thank you all for always having me and having this platform for not just me, but for others who have been here. Brother, you all have brought on a range of guests. You all have been consistent for years. And brother, again, we just thank you and applaud you all, brother, because we have a way of communicating with each other from around the country instantly. And again, with the videos that you all have circulated, you all have helped grow young people and re-inspire, reinvigorate, and retool those of us who are older in the movement. So this is absolutely necessary. And so, and again, it's key. And so remember, brothers, please give your support to the National Reparations Institute. I have known Professor Ra for over 40 years now. I was never registered in any of his classes, but I would audit the class. I would sit in on Professor Ra. And then one of the things, brother, y'all used to do the Black Consciousness Conferences in December. Brother, some of the best conferences when I was growing in my 20s and in my 30s, brother, some of the best conferences you all would do every year. I'm not sure they still do the Black Consciousness Conferences, but you all had some of the best student organizers, best leaders from around the country, brother, and that helped take the base and the foundation. So I will always be grateful and appreciative, brother, for the body of work that you all have done and those who are working with you all on the Conscious Corner, all of you all. And I know Professor Ra has helped. And again, just thank you all. And you all can visit us. Please visit our website, nationalreparationsinstitute.org. We are a 501c3 organization. We don't take money from the government or anybody else. It's the people who have supported us, brother. And we need your support. And I would say, first off, start by getting the National Reparations Declaration, the ebook. You can get the ebook or you can get the hard copy. And again, what that does, that allows us to stay in print. It's a quick read. Over 30 scholars have reviewed it. Dr. Ray Wimbush at Morgan State University, he wrote the foreword. He called me a few years ago and he said, Professor Muhammad, in my 40 years, I have never seen a better calculation than what you all have provided. I will write the foreword. We didn't go get white scholars. We didn't use their data. But Brother Michael, here at the Institute, developed the scale. And even, you know, because I was a student who struggled in math in college. And so, but the scale, when you read it, it makes sense. We cover four areas that you got to look at when you're talking complete reparation. Brother Rock, there's another problem in the reparations movement. There are those who are running around saying, give me a check. There's a major land, the problem with that, there's a major land question that has to be dealt with. Complete at the federal and local level. Black people are operating on less than 2 million acres of land, over 45 million Black people in America. That cannot feed Black people and sustain us as a people. But up until 1970, brother, we were controlling over 15 million acres of land. Reverend Howard Gunn was at the National Reparations Indaba here in Atlanta. He's a brother that owns over 500 acres of land in Georgia and in Mississippi and in Florida, I should say. So please visit our website, nationalreparationsinstitute.org, or please give us a call at the National Reparations Institute. And again, I think I have a card. Let me get my number. But anyway, if you need our number, you can call me directly at 404-645-0513. Again, 404-645-0513. Or send us an email at info@nationalreparationsinstitute.org. Again, reparationsinstitute.org. And let me close with this. Let me close with my motto. And for the remainder of the 21st century, we must produce thousands of great thinkers who are great builders and thousands of great builders who are also great thinkers. Then and only then are we prepared to take our original position on top and at the center of the world stage as a proud, productive, and proficient people. This great human restoration and transformation and elevation of our people will happen only with complete reparations. Thank you all for your time. Thank you all for your attention. And as I came before you, I greet you with the greeting words of peace. As-salamu alaykum.
Alaykum salam.
Salam. And free the land, brother.
Free the land.
Yeah. So
Black law, Black people. Thank you, brother.
So tomorrow we have Miss Dez coming on. She's a
Miss
Dez. She's a classmate of ours from Long Beach State. So it's another Long Beach State alum that's coming on. And her topic is generational differences. Generational differences. So
I'm going to get you on, brother.
Well, it'd be good. I'd love to have you here. And thanks for those kind words. And we definitely wouldn't be able to do what we do without great guests like yourself, Brother Reginald. We appreciate you and all that you do. And keep up the great work. We definitely support you, and we're going to keep doing what we're doing.
Yes,
sir. So we're going to do our close, each one teach one, and Conscious Corner. Everybody have the rest of a great day, and I'll see you tomorrow.